The Waddle and Sylvie podcast is brought to you by Marquee Sports Network.
It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Waddle and Sylvie are off today. Jesse Rogers, Connor McKnight. Connor's here till 6. I'll be out here at 4. Brian Hanley will jump in, talk some baseball in a little bit. But let's continue on this Deshaun Watson conversation. Connor, did you see this tweet from a few hours ago from Deshaun Watson? I'm hearing there's a march plan on my behalf in Houston today. Although I am humbled, it's Martin Luther King Day. Although I'm humbled, I ask that whoever is organizing the march cancel for the sake of public safety. COVID is spreading at a high rate, and I don't want any fans to unnecessarily expose themselves to infection. I don't even know if that was true. Was there a march
scheduled? I doubt it. I think we're marching for other things today. I'm not entirely sure.
But that is not a fake account. That is him. It's a blue check and all.
Blue check and everything?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Right. That is funny.
Deshaun Watson living it up.
A march.
Enjoying himself.
Can we get him here? What do you got for me, Connor?
No, of course not. Of course we can't. Here's the thing. I think it's important, to dream and to hold the Bears organization, the management, the front office, accountable for not having Deshaun Watson in the first place and continuing on this process of, developing Mitch and trading for Nick Foles and all of that kind of stuff. I do think, though, that and Adam Schefter said it best on Get Up this morning when he was kind of, laying out where things are at for Watson and the Texans. And I think it's worth Bears fans taking notice of where things are at, too. I know Sean's got it for us. This is Adam Schefter kind of laying out how bad and where things are now between Deshaun Watson and the Texans, a team he will likely no longer play for.
There's a lot to this, and there's going to be a lot more to this. And it's a little early in the process, considering that the Texans just hired their new general manager, Nick Caserio, and they don't even have a head coach yet. But you can begin to see this particular situation unfold as the offseason goes on. What we know now is this, that basically, according to Sarah Barshop, who covers the Texans for ESPN.com, Deshaun Watson has not returned calls from the organization. What we also know is that he's very unhappy with the way the organization has proceeded this offseason and has looked back at some of the organization's prior actions. What we can see here is that not only can Deshaun Watson request a trade, but he also could decide to withhold his services. And because of the no trade clause in his contract, the Texans have very little control here. Essentially, this is like an NBA situation. This is Deshaun Watson getting to pick where he wants to go. This is an NBA style trade if and when the Texans get to the point that they are ready to make it, which they're not right now, but I believe, and other people around the league believe, they're going to be forced to get to eventually. And because that no trade clause exists, if they said, hey, we want to trade Deshaun Watson to, hypothetically, Chicago, and he said, I don't want to go to Chicago. I want to go to Miami. I'm not going to report to Chicago. Or I want to be traded to the Jets. I'm not going to report to Chicago. You can begin to go through any of the variables and any of the hypotheticals in your mind. This is in a bad place right now. It looks like it's going to continue to go down a bad place. But let's see who the Texans hire as their general manager. Let's see if they're able to repair any of the damage that's been done. And let's see how this situation unfolds. But we've talked about this before. This, Greeny, this is going to be the story of the offseason.
Sarah Barshop will join Connor and Brian at 4:30 here on ESPN 1000. And why does Adam have to use Chicago as his example, Connor?
That's the most hilarious part of that whole cut.
That's not fair.
The world's most connected NFL reporter just subs in your team for the worst case hypothetical. That is hilarious.
But I will take issue with one thing there. Look, if you want to ask for the trade because you're unhappy with a lot of things, that's fine. I'm just old school, and I know it's old school. You don't get to dictate where you get traded. At that point, the team has to do what's best for the team. If Deshaun Watson forces a trade and they already have to take 75 cents on the dollar because they know he's not happy, then they get to choose the best deal possible. And if he's not going to show up, then shame on him. You're not, then you don't deserve to go. I love Deshaun Watson. Let's remind our ESPN listening audience, when Cap and I were arguing in the draft about the draft, I wanted Deshaun Watson at 3, and he wanted Myles Garrett. Luckily, he didn't say Trubisky. I'd give more crap. But you don't get to ask for a trade and then decide where you go. But that's old school. I know he probably will get to decide.
Well, so here's the other part of that, though. Remember, Jesse, the Texans just kind of like brazenly decided they didn't need a general manager. They weren't going to have anybody running the football side of things. Bill O'Brien makes this blind power grab over the course of his tenure there, and then is trading draft picks away. Like, in a certain sense, Deshaun Watson having the contract he has and the no trade clause that exists in it is comeuppance for allowing your football franchise to be run by a guy that didn't have the chops to do all of the jobs he was doing. So from that standpoint, you know, as Bill, I was saying this for a couple of years now, like, the only thing that was evident to me as Bill O'Brien was coaching that team is that he was trying to get Deshaun Watson killed. Like, he was working as hard as he could to try and end Deshaun Watson right there on the field. And in some way, like, if this is, you know, if this is karma, if this is like cosmic fate for the Texans allowing their franchise to be run in this particular way over the last 3 or 4 years since Deshaun, 5 years, I guess, since Deshaun Watson got drafted, then so be it. Like, they've kind of earned this in a really ugly, gross way. I hope they get out of it. You know, I hope Nick Caserio is able to, you know, figure out what quarterback to draft next. We just saw Justin Fields declared for the draft this morning. You know, I hope that they work themselves out of it. It's better to have more good quarterbacks in the league. But shoot, you shouldn't be allowed to get away with running a franchise the way that they have tried to.
Yeah, how about that new GM, though? He thinks he's coming in. He's already got the most important position on the team settled. Now he can work around building around him. And the first thing that he gets is a trade demand by this guy. I mean, if I'm that GM, man, I am at Deshaun Watson's doorstep. And I'm like, dude, they hired me. It's not my fault. Like, just work with me. I will build a team around you. I will earn your trust. Like, right? Think about it. Who Deshaun Watson, he could be mad at everybody in that organization but one person, that GM. It has nothing to do with him, what went down. Nothing to do with him. So that's the one guy that might have a shot at convincing him, look, I understand the hiring process, this, that. This is just my dream to be a GM. They gave it to me. Can you work with me here? I'll bring you in on everything. Am I wrong? That's the one guy Deshaun deserves to give the benefit of the doubt to, because he has no history with him.
I think you're right. And Caserio better show up with like wine and roses and chocolate and the whole thing at Watson's doorstep.
But, another $100 million, whatever.
Oh, God, yeah. All the cash you can find. You got to get the gruntle right out of that place. But here's the other part of this. Like, Nick Caserio is not he knows the league. Like, he's well-respected. He's well-connected. He was, you know, potentially, he was interviewed for this Texans job that they didn't end up filling a couple of years ago. It's more likely than not, Jesse, that he knew that there was going to have to be some rift repair at best with Deshaun Watson and his side of the football operations there. And at worst, that he was going to have to look at trading one of the league's brightest stars and a quarterback that is clearly poised to grow if only they could put a couple of things around him and stop getting him killed on the field.
No doubt. 312-332-3776 is the phone number if you want to sound off about anything regarding Deshaun Watson and how much it'll hurt a second time when he gets traded to a different, you know, another team and not the Bears. You know, he's gonna help two franchises, and neither of them are going to be the Chicago Bears if he gets traded. So if you want to sound off on anything football related, we've been talking about that. But Connor's our new pre- and post-game host for the White Sox. I cover baseball for ESPN 1000. It's the hot stove season. The White Sox have been so busy. I wanted to jump in about Liam Hendricks. I didn't get a chance to say anything on the air last week about it, Connor. I mean, I was on the Zoom with Rick Hahn and Liam. And first of all, as you know, everyone knows, great personality with Hendricks. But I mentioned that, Rick, I think it's the White Sox and the Padres neck and neck for most winter Zooms. so far because they've been making all these moves. And every day I'm getting an email from the Padres, an email from the White Sox. Here's a Zoom with AJ Preller. Here's a Zoom with Rick Hahn. So kudos to both those teams, but the one we care about, the White Sox, for doing things during this slowdown and making their team viable. And here's my point about Hendricks. I don't think we realize how big of a signing it is. I mean, maybe we do. I mean, the money dictates it. But think about the next 4 years, 3 to 4 years is under his contract. He is going to be throwing some huge, huge pitches for the White Sox. I mean, there's going to be some big moments for Liam Hendricks over the next 3 to 4 years. It's one thing to bring back Adam Eaton and Lance Lynn even, but like Hendricks is going to be the guy in that role for the next 4 years, and those are going to be some important moments. And you got to commend the White Sox. They went out and got the best guy on the market.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they went to the top of the market in terms of reliever, free agent market. I had Lynn Casper on White Sox Weekly on Saturday. Mm-hmm. We were chatting a bit about the Hendricks signing because that was, you know, like you say, Jesse, that was the big news of the week and the weekend. I think it's really cool that Hendricks, you know, it's news that the White Sox signed the best closer in baseball, but it's news again when Hendricks talks about what his expectations are with Waddle and Sylvie on Friday afternoon, when he talks about what his expectations are on the Zoom that you were in. Len and I talked about it. Liam Hendricks wants to throw 80 innings. There aren't relievers that do that anymore. And I got to tell you, and I mentioned this on White Sox Weekly, when the A's ran him out there for game 3 after throwing north of 50 pitches in game 2, I thought, go ahead, bring it on. Go, good luck. That is just, that's not a thing relievers do. That's advantage White Sox in game 3. There is no way that Liam Hendricks comes out there with the fastball that he had in game 2. It's just, it's not happening. And I was wrong. And he did. And he shoved. And the A's moved on. If he's the guy that's throwing the, as Len put it on White Sox Weekly on Saturday, the Goose Gossage type of workload, you know, working 5 outs, maybe even 6 outs on days where he's had a little rest, maybe you've had an off day or something, that allows a very good but still somewhat young bullpen with guys like Aaron Bummer and Garrett Crochet, for instance, coming back off of injuries to have time to develop and get healthy, to not have to rely on a little bit of an experience, albeit highly talented, but a little bit of an experience in some of that bullpen with guys like, you know, maybe Foster or, like I said, Crochet. This is the White Sox are poised to have a very, very versatile bullpen if Liam Hendricks is able to work that kind of length in a ball game and throughout a season. It's really kind of interesting.
It is interesting, and it is a fine line. And he mentioned on the Zoom, and I've heard other people say this, I'm sure you have too, Joe Maddon used to say this, some relievers want more work to be sharper. I mean, that keeps them sharper is to pitch 3 days in a row.
Yeah.
Now, there is that fine line, will pop up 2 years from now if he's overworked. You know what I mean? There's a big picture thing you have to think about here. And the thing is, he has the right manager to let him go those 6 outs or 3 back-to-back-to-back days. I mean, there's no I don't think there's a doubt La Russa will give him the longer leash than maybe some other guys that are completely analytically driven and stuff. But if Hendricks has proven over time the workload helps him, I don't think there's any doubt he's going to be given that chance, and it sounds like they've had those conversations. By the way, before we break, and 312-332-3776, the number, you can tweet us, C1McKnight, or at Jesse Rogers ESPN. If you have a question, a baseball question, now's the time. 312-332-3776. I texted Sylvie the day they signed Hendricks. I called it the anti-Kimbrel signing. hear me out. Similar contracts, right? Big money, similar contracts. But the Cubs signed Kimbrel after a year and a half, 2 years of poor production, and you know, hoping that he'd get back to his years with the Red Sox and the Braves and stuff, right? The Sox did the opposite. They signed him where his most recent production was at a high level, and they ignored the further, you know, going back a few years when he was DFA'd and all that stuff, which obviously common sense, that makes more sense, right? When you go off the recent production, you don't worry about what happened 5 years ago. The Cubs did the opposite. They ignored the recent production and went off of what happened 3-4 years ago. Now, these kids started to find his game, Kimbrel, but I'd have much more confidence in Liam Hendricks going forward. I think any baseball fan would say the same.
I think that's right. You know, the Cubs signed Craig Kimbrel after 2 years where his walk rate tripled, and that's not great. But really, like you say, they signed him off of the say-so from David Ross. You know, I mean, he caught a bullpen session from him. Things looked good. Mechanically, they looked fine, and he kind of got the okay there. The strikeouts are what's fascinating to me, the uptick from Hendricks. And I think White Sox fans are going to notice this right away. Alex Colomé was good. You know, he converted a lot of saves. The strikeout percentage for him was 17.8%. The walk percentage from him was 8.9%. Hendricks struck out 40% of the batters he faced last year and walked only 3%. That difference is enormous.
Yeah.
Absolutely oh, yeah. enormous. And it's going to change the way you watch the last 5-6 outs on the south side this year.
Just to put a bow on the Kimbrel stuff, I do think, and it's getting in the weeds a little bit, he was a victim of timing a little bit, and you really have to follow like his game to know. Like his thing is this rising fastball. Mm-hmm. Just, I'm telling you, just basically, it was midsummer 2019, when they signed Kimbrel, is about the time hitters around the league started to figure out how to hit the rising fastball, because even Kyle Hendricks, who never threw a rising fastball, was starting to throw that because that was the one pitch hitters could not hit. But they started getting under those rising fastballs just as Kimbrel signed with the Cubs, and he gave up, what, 9 home runs in half a season, which was a career high. And so his bread and butter pitch is no longer so special around the league. Hitters are able to hit it out. So anyway. I don't know if the Cubs should have figured that out or not, but that has nothing to do with the White Sox and Hendricks. 312-332-3776 is the number if you want to jump on. Cubs and Sox conversation, a little bit more on Deshaun Watson, because that's not going anywhere next on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Connor McKnight will be hosting pre- and post-game for White Sox Radio right here on ESPN 1000, and I sure will be covering some of those games. The White Sox are one of those teams that everyone's going to be talking about again in 2021. ESPN's going to be doing some of their games, obviously opening night, as a matter of fact, right? First Sunday, isn't that the White Sox? I think so, Connor. You know this
schedule
better than I do.
You should know your assignments, my man. Come on. The White Sox are a top 5 projected team in wins above replacement. They're one of the most exciting in ball clubs in baseball. How are you? I mean, write this down.
Boy, they really gave you the memo, huh?
Oh, I got the car wash. Yeah. Everything's yeah, we're all good.
312-332-3776 if you want to talk some baseball or some of this lingering Deshaun Watson stuff. And when I say lingering, it's going to linger for a long time. Rich from the South Side wants to go there. What's up, Rich? You're on ESPN 1000.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, Rich.
Hey, Watson wants out of the Texans because they took away his number one target. Okay? Okay. The Bears signing Watson is a win-win because they would end up signing Allen Robinson most likely, and I think Allen Robinson and Deshaun Watson would have chemistry and be successful.
Problem is, you don't have enough to trade for him. It's not about signing him; you have to trade for him.
No, you don't have the picks. You don't have the picks. You don't have the players. I was watching – you remember Mike Sando of The Athletic, Jesse? Good NFL
sure,
runner.
Yeah.
Been around for
uh-huh.
a good long time. Smart dude.
Yeah.
He's got the five, you know, like trade packages that might work, that might play out, you know, just kind of trade mm-hmm. destinations for Watson.
Yeah.
Here's one that ought to get Bears fans real excited. It's trade number 4 he's got listed here. It's to the Lions. The Lions would get Deshaun Watson, which feels good for everybody. And then the Texans get Matthew Stafford back, plus a 2021 first-round pick. That's the number 7 pick. 2022 first-round pick. and a 2022 second round pick. That is by far, I'm just kind of scrolling through this as quickly as I can, but that's some of the lowest draft pick compensation that the Texans would get in any of these projected trades. And again, this is just, you know, this is Sandoz, well connected and knows what he's talking about, but you know, these aren't done deals right now. He's not reporting these. These are just kind of, you know, what he kind of thinks would be a value coming back.
Yeah, you play the game of what can we put together for each of these teams that might be in on it. The one you mentioned of the five, there's one that doesn't involve sending a quarterback back, and that's the Atlanta Falcons. So,
correct.
You know, our previous guest, Mike Tenier, mentioned that, like, if it's Miami, Tua goes back. If it's Detroit, Stafford goes back. And that fulfills a big part of the trade. The Texans get a starting quarterback, depending on age, one that might be there for a while. If it was Tua, maybe not so long. If it was Stafford. Falcons, at least he put something together where you don't have to send a quarterback back because, you know, they probably don't want Matt Ryan at that age or whatever. My point being, there is hope for the Bears. There is hope because – you know, call Sando and tell him to redo it with the Bears instead of the Falcons. What did he have? That's the one that's most interesting. So Texans would get a first-round pick in 2021, but that's the number four pick overall. Second-round pick in 21 as well, so first and second this year. Then first-round pick in 22, second-round pick in 23. So the key there is being the number four pick. Bears are unfortunately lower because they made the playoffs.
Right, and remember, the Texans do not have a first-round pick in this coming draft. They traded that away to the Dolphins for Laremy Tunsil. So it's pretty funny. You mentioned the Tua Tagovailoa thing. If he does come back with the Texans, they'd be trading back for the pick they already traded for. I mean, the Dolphins, that'd be a fleecing. That'd be like an old-school, mid-90s Atlanta Braves fleece job. That'd be really fun to watch happen.
Yankees did to the Cubs with Gleyber Torres. Just go ahead and re-sign Aroldis Chapman.
Flags fly forever, baby.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go to Kevin from Lake in the Hills. You're on ESPN 1000. Kevin, what's up?
Hey, boys. I got a question about the new signing Cuban pitcher for the White Sox. It looks pretty high in the international list. Can you give us a little bit of background on this kid? And does he have a chance to even make the bullpen for the big team?
Sure, I can do my best on that one. Full disclosure, I haven't gotten into some of the international signings yet. You know, it's third day on the job, something like that. But a guy that I really, really admire is Eric Langenhagen over at Fangraphs. And he's got little write-ups on a lot of these dudes, and I can give you Vera's. He's been up to 97 during pre-agreement workouts, 90, 94, something like that. Cutter curve change, all of which occasionally good but consistent. He's about the age of a 2021 college pitcher, and his stuff and frame are comparable to those of Florida's Tommy Mace, who's also got a big frame and arm, but three inconsistent secondaries. I think some of the stuff that I've been reading about Vera specifically are, you know, at 6'3 and 185, that's kind of what they got him penciled in at, how much more development is left on that frame, and if not much more, then where does that stuff kind of sit? I mean, Jesse, you've seen some of the drafting that teams have done, some of progressive baseball clubs have done when it comes to pitching. They like to see a little bit more projection on the frame as they're bringing them out of, you know, whether that's high school or college. And guys who are, I don't know, a little bit more like fully developed, guys who have kind of maxed out that weight to size ratio, kind of get backburnered a little bit. Still, you know, there is a top international signee that gives them Oscar Colas and Yelky Cespedes. And it's really nice to see a franchise like the White Sox, who have pushed in on 2021 with their free agent signings and with the development of some of their young players, continue to make pushes for the next wave of players and the next wave of players.
And I don't think like this. Yeah, Cespedes isn't going to be far off, I don't believe. And but here's the thing. You have a contending team now. That changes things. Remember Rizzo would talk about this. He got his reps in on a crappy team. He was able to break in, have his ups and downs, nobody cared, and then finally figured it out, right? I mean, you don't want to be breaking in someone on a contending team. It is tougher to break in a contending team and get your reps in because you're trying to win every game. So I think they will take it slow with some of these guys, a little bit more slow than if they were rebuilding. or in the rebuilding phase, I should say, because then you would give them the major league reps. But they're in a different phase now. And when Cespedes or anyone else can help them win is when you will see them.
I think you're absolutely right. And especially when it comes to Cespedes, like the power's there. There are questions about how much contact he can consistently make, you know, what kind of quote unquote batting average skill he has. Not that batting average is everything when it comes to a hitter, you know that, but like where he lands in terms of hitting advanced pitching is still a fair question. And I don't know about you, Jesse, but I think a lot of teams, you know, and the White Sox are definitely one of them, kind of have to, they've still got question marks to know about when it comes to what this minor league season in 2021 is going to look like. They whacked 40 minor league teams. The schedule is already going to be delayed for some minor league affiliates because of COVID. I think a lot of teams are still waiting to see not only what their big league rosters are going to look like in terms of number and whether the National League has a DH, but also what their minor league systems are going to be allowed to do and how many players and where they can send guys.
Are there any Cub fans left? 312-333-3776. Is everyone so down on this team? Let's hear from you, Cub fans. Let's go to Matt on the Dan Ryan, though. He wants to talk a little bit more White Sox. What's up, Matt?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I was just wondering if you've heard, what are the realistic expectations on Michael Kopech this year for the White Sox?
Well, I think they're pretty high. Now, he doesn't need to be a 1, 2, or 3. He can slide in as a number 4. But I think they would be in a little bit more aggressive mode for another starting pitcher if they didn't believe in him. And all the offseason reports seem to be good. So I think you can expect some good things. Now, he hasn't pitched in a year. So there's all these, you know, layers to it that, yeah, of you know, some unknown to it. But it, on paper, it looks like they are expecting pretty good things out of him and shouldn't have as much pressure because they've added Lance Lynn.
Yeah, and I think being able to have those top 3 guys in the rotation in Lynn, Giolito, and Keuchel allow, you know, Ethan Katz and the White Sox kind of pitching infrastructure to allow for things with Kopech. You know, not saying that, you know, he's going to get pulled early from games or that he has to start in the minor leagues or what have you. Just that, you know, you can kind of wear some of those bumps. Yeah. And you're going to have to do that as a young pitcher. We kind of forget how little experience Kopech has in the big leagues. And it's really easy to just say, well, he's this age and he throws 96, 97. Therefore, he must be the next, you know, Noah Syndergaard or whatever he was billed as coming up. I think a good thing for White Sox fans when it comes to Kopech is that he is not a guy who takes his conditioning lightly, who takes his workouts lightly, who takes his, you know, kind of staying in shape lightly. He is, I don't know if I use the word fanatic, but pretty close to that. And I think, you know, the way Katz, the new White Sox pitching coach, has talked about Kopech is the expectations are, and kind of the outlook is, he is a starting pitcher. He is a guy that can be in that rotation right now. When the season starts, and that is a very good thing when it comes to the White Sox depth from a starting pitching standpoint.
Yeah, and you would think a full spring training would be good for him, you know, after missing the year. I mean, if they could do the whole full 6 weeks, get back acclimated, back with his teammates, having fun again, I think that'd be huge. And also a little less pressure deeper into the rotation. We have to break. 312-332-3776. We'll continue with this baseball conversation. Brian Hanley is going to join the show at 4 o'clock. Lots of Deshaun Watson talk. Can we get him to Chicago? We'll continue on ESPN 1000. Ready?
It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
Waddle and Sylvie are off today. Jesse Rogers, Connor McKnight. Connor's here till 6. Brian Hanley will join him at 4. Some good football conversation. Just a great weekend of football, Connor, as we talked about at the top of the show. Great quarterback play. Man, is Aaron Rodgers just, wow, is he flinging it like an all-pro that he is. And obviously the big news about Mahomes as the week goes on. But I think we all agree, some way, somehow, he's going to play. You agree,
no.
Right?
Okay. Mahomes is going to play. I'd seen some tweeting about Mahomes' issue actually being a pinched nerve that caused some problems for him in that game. I know that there's going to be some reporting coming out of there about exactly what Mahomes does or doesn't have going on, but I'm with you. I think he plays. I think too, like, you know, Jesse, I think maybe more needs to be said about Chad Henne as the backup quarterback who made 3-4 gutsy plays on gutsy calls from
Andrew. I thought he was going to have a concussion when he dove for that first down.
Did you think he? I thought he had it.
Yeah,
I thought he had the first down.
I thought he had the first down. I thought he had a concussion.
and then he goes for it again. Yeah. I mean, to have that kind of like command in the, and granted, you know, every time we talk about this, I led the show with some of this stuff. I can't help but watch playoff games and not filter it back through what we've seen of the Chicago Bears, what we've seen of that system, what we've seen of the capability of those players. And sure, it's different, like, when you have Chad Henne making plays and you've got the backfield that Kansas City does, even without Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and you've got, you know, Tyreek and all that, those guys, all those weapons available to you. But you had a backup quarterback come in and make 3 stone-cold plays, 2 of them on fourth down to win a ball game. And there's trust, there's guts, there's moxie there, all those kinds of things. I just don't know a whole lot of other franchises who have the trust in that guy on the roster to make those kind of calls. And I think Andy Reid deserves a hell of a lot of credit for doing what he did and coming out on top.
It's just great leadership there. And we've been talking about Deshaun Watson and just how much it's going to hurt to see him traded. And the Bears missed out a second time on him because that's inevitable. But we're also doing some baseball this hour. And Kevin wants to talk some Cubs from Minneapolis. You're on ESPN 1000. Kevin, what's on your mind?
Hi, Jesse. Love the show. I just had a quick question. So I read an article today that the Cubs right now, if they had their payroll for 2022, would have the lowest payroll in the NL Central among all the teams. Do you think that's going to happen? And when do you think they'll start spending money again? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's just they don't have a lot of commitments, maybe, is what that article said. I don't know. But I don't know if they're going to have the lowest payroll in 2022, right? I mean, there's a lot that has to go on between now and then with all the teams in the division. Your second question is even harder. When are they going to spend again? It's not going to be this offseason. Start with that. We know that. They want to shed more if they can. I don't suspect they're going to, you know, go nuts next offseason either. I mean, I think it's going to be a slow retool. I think they'll spend more next offseason, this offseason, and then more the next offseason after that. I think they're sort of bottoming out, so to speak, this offseason. But it could extend a while. I don't know for sure. Now, I don't think anybody knows for sure. I don't think Jed knows for sure when he's going to spend again. But it's not anytime real soon in terms of what they were spending before, which was like $200 million type stuff. So they had their fun. Now you got to kind of wait for it to regroup and wait for them to regroup and sort of bring this thing back. You know, it's some of the problems of their own making.
Is that – oh, of course they are. But is that spending trend, that force, is that strong enough to stop any conversation about an extension with a guy like Contreras, Baez? You know the names. I don't have to go through them all.
It has paused those conversations. I think if you want to own a baseball team and do business, you're going to have to pick up on those conversations. You can't just do nothing. So I think it's paused them. But I think it's also, if you're Wilson Contreras, you're a little bit more nervous than you were before the pandemic. If you're Javi Baez, you're a little bit. But at some point, they'll pick those back up. You just may not hear the numbers that you want to hear. I mean, they were very close, I think, to signing Javi Baez before the shutdown. So for that to disappear completely, shame on the Cubs if that happens. So I do think maybe it's delayed it, but they will pick up some of those conversations. But let's put it this way. They're not re-engaging with Chris Bryant for huge, huge money. The most we can say is, well, they were close with Baez. They'll get back with him. But, you know, I don't see anything else moving anytime soon.
Well, then you're in a situation where, I mean, I guess the way I kind of look at the Cubs is, regardless of how you got here, you're here now, right? And it means that at the deadline, I'm assuming we have a somewhat normal baseball season, you know, COVID excepted, somewhere around the deadline, you're taking a look at whatever expiring contracts are performing best and then trading them. Because that's kind of the path you've set out on. So even if that means that the guy you were closest to an extension on, Javi Baez, if he's playing the best out of those guys that are, you know, that group, that core that we've been attached to for 4 or 5 years now, you're moving Javi Baez because that's what's being dictated to you by the circumstances around you. And I, you know, it's unfortunate, but no baseball team really wants to be in a situation where circumstances dictate your the skill you're able to acquire as opposed to you being able to dictate those things.
Well, that's if you haven't already signed Baez by the deadline. I mean, if they get to the deadline and Baez, Rizzo, and Bryant haven't re-signed with the team, for example, then you have to entertain trades for all of them. I mean, you have to, because 2 months later, all 29 other teams could be interested. But the hope, I think, would be Baez and Rizzo, that's the kind of two guys I've been saying, will be locked up by July 31st. Because if they're not, then you have to entertain trade thoughts. Bryant's a different story. That's a different story. He'll probably be gone at 50 cents for the dollar.
Do you see moving Bryant along with a large contract as an offload as a possibility?
No, Bryant is the big contract.
I'm talking about the next big number though, Jesse. Like, yeah, sure, 19's big, but if you're already getting 50 cents on the dollar, can you put a relatively bad contract in that Bryant deal and just take absolutely nothing to move the cash?
Not now. I mean, July 31st, anything can kind of happen. But no, now he is the big contract. Nobody wants the $19.5 million, even for 1 year. They just don't want it. And if they want it, you're getting back a B prospect, and you might even have to eat some of the money. That's how much the trade market for that kind of money is dried up for a guy with 1 year left who's coming off some injuries and stuff. So, no, he is the big contract. You attach him to Will – that. If anything, it's you attach him to Wilson Contreras, who's owed less and has more years under team control and all that stuff. So they're in a tight spot with Bryant. They really are. It's unfortunate for a lot of reasons, and the team's not going to come out on top. He might if he has a big year, but the team's not going to come out on top, because even if he has a good first few months, how much are you getting for a two-month hitting rental? You get a lot for a pitching rental, not as much for a hitting rental.
Yeah, right. I think you're right. God, how far are they? Flags fly forever, though, Jesse. Flags fly forever.
Kevin from Tinley Park, you're on ESPN 1000. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, good.
I was just calling and listening. As a Cubs fan and sports fan in general, after seeing what the Brooklyn Nets paid pulled off with the Rockets of the James Harden deal, and like, if the Cubs could replicate anything that the Rockets did, their front office did, and get all the I was listening to what you just said about Chris Bryant being like 50 cents off the dollar, but I love Baez, but like you said, I totally agree. If he's the best player and we can get the best prospects back from him, that's what the Cubs got to do. We got to accept a few crappy years for like the next 3 to 5 to see the next 10 to be great. You know, it's kind of just a pattern of sports in general.
Well, then you've got to make those trades now. You're not getting 5 prospects on July 31st.
I want that to happen, to be honest. I'm just ready for the overhaul now. Why wait, you know, and see and what win maybe 77 games and, you know, screw it up at the trade deadline or whatever. Yeah, I totally would want to start the season and just be complete rebuild.
What a mess the division is, Connor, as well. Thanks for the call, Kevin. Because it's somewhat winnable for any of these teams other than the Pirates, what's going to happen July 31st? All four teams are kind of retooling. They don't know what they want to do. And then you're in it. Are you really going to go for it? Because the Dodgers and the Padres are so – and the NL East is stacked. All these teams are so much better than yours, but you can't give up a season. Like, the Central is a mess, and these teams are going to have tough decisions between now and August 1st.
Well, and here's the other force that's working against the Cubs right now. It's you go ahead and look through anybody's top 25, top 50 MLB free agents, and the vast majority of them don't have teams right now. So the question then becomes, if the Cubs are trying to shop some of these guys around, you know, like Joe was talking about, or like Kevin was talking about, rather, is well, why would we give up our prospects when we can just spend money on guys? And it probably won't be the kind of money that they thought they'd have to spend because of this offseason being what it is, teams hemorrhaging money, a pandemic affecting overall prices, that's another really big force that's going against the Cubs trying to make moves here.
No doubt about it. For example, the Dodgers, Justin Turner, right? He's a free agent. He's their own guy. Do you think they're going to have to pay him $20 million to retain him for 1 year? No. I mean, healthy, I'd rather have Chris Bryant than Justin Turner, but the Dodgers don't need Chris Bryant over Justin Turner to, you know what I mean? Like they're winning. They can win without Justin Turner or Chris Bryant. So it's like, you're right. There's so much inventory out there. Why would any team pick up $20 million and give up prospects for it? So they're in a bad spot with Chris Bryant. We have to break. I'm going to, you know, sort of wrap up my portion of the day. And Brian Hanley's going to join Connor McKnight coming up at 4 o'clock. This is ESPN 1000.
It's Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Waddle and Sylvie will be back tomorrow. Lots of football talk from them. Sure, they'll have some interesting thoughts on Deshaun Watson's situation, as I think the entire football world does, as this thing develops down in Houston. Not that the Bears are going to be involved. Connor McKnight, Jesse Rogers here. Connor's going to be here till 6 with Brian Hanley. I'm going to jump off at 4. I actually have to finish something up, Connor, for ESPN.com that's going to run tomorrow. I don't like to do these kinds of teases, but I'm going to.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I know. I do have a small thing about the Cubs in there tomorrow, and the only tease I'll give you is I don't think fans are going to be happy with the information I put out there tomorrow. So
way to hook them. Way to hook them.
One bad. No, I don't know if I'm hooking them. They may say screw ESPN.com. If it's bad, I don't want to read it. But I will have a little tidbit about the Cubs tomorrow on ESPN.com. I'm actually filling in for Jeff Passan's Things That You're Hearing Around the League. That's the name of the column. Things That You're Hearing Around the League. Jeff's on assignment. So I wrote something, and one of them is Cub related. And I have a few other things I have to finish up here before my deadline. So that's why one reason why I'm going to be out of here in a few minutes. And speaking of the Cubs, Connor, and I know you'll give me a moment. Mark Gonzalez, the beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune, who's covered the Cubs and the White Sox, is leaving the Tribune. And I just wanted to just tell the listening public what a great guy he was to work with, work beside, knows his baseball, knows his history. You should have heard the conversations he would have with Joe Maddon. I mean, they talk about players I've never heard of, scouts I've never heard of. And there'd be a group of people, but it'd be these two guys talking old school baseball back and forth. Mark Gonzalez knew his stuff. He'll be missed in Chicago. I mean, at the Tribune. I don't know what he's going to do next, but great writer and one of the rare guys to cover the White Sox and Cubs, Connor. I mean, how many guys can say they've done that?
Not too many. I am so glad you brought up Gonzo because he is one of my absolutely favorite people to see in a press box. He is deluxe. I learned so much about the game from just following Gonzo around, and God bless him for never telling me to get away or anything like that. But just a quick story here. When Ken Griffey Jr. came back to what was then US Cellular, now Guaranteed Rate Field, Gonzo was the guy who was like, hey, come with me. Griffey's in the visiting clubhouse. I'm gonna go talk to him. You should come with. And so I'm covering the game or whatever. And I let all of my responsibilities go because I knew this was going to be the only time I ever had to go have a conversation with Ken Griffey in my baseball covering career, because this was his last year. It was when he came back with the Mariners. So thanks to Gonzo for letting me be a part of hanging around Ken Griffey and talking baseball with Junior. It was absolutely one of my top five baseball experiences.
Yeah, I assume he's going to stick around and be working for somebody in the baseball world here because he's that good.
Of course he will.
But we just won't be able to read him in the Tribune. You know, I can't copy his stuff and use it for my own, so anymore. Oh, well. Just kidding. Anyway, what do you and Brian have coming up the next 2 hours filling in for Waddle and Sylvie?
We have a ton to do. I think we're going to get into, you know, these championship matchups a little bit.
How much could you do?
No, you're not off guard at all.
Off guard with that question.
No, we got tons to do. We got to get into these the championship Sundays that are coming up with the Packers and Buccaneers, the Chiefs and the Bills. We are also going to continue a conversation around Deshaun Watson and the headline that will not leave the NFL for quite some time. Sarah Barshop, ESPN NFL Nation, who covers the Texans, is going to join us at 4:35. So we get the inside scoop from somebody who is very, very close to that team.
Yeah, I'm jealous of NFL Nation. Like at ESPN.com, we have like four baseball writers, you know, throughout the country, where NFL Nation has one in every NFL city. That is, I just love that. So Sarah's
that's the future
tune right there. It's so cool. You know what I mean? And we're baseball, we're scrambling around. I'm going to this city, that city, covering the Cubs, covering the Braves in the playoffs. And every NFL team has an ESPN writer dedicated to it. And of course, Jeff Dickerson does a great job covering the Bears. That's at 4:30, right? Sarah's going to be on at 4:30.
Yep, 4:30. And remember, Jesse, as you say goodbye and go to work on your national column, don't forget where you'll be for the very first Sunday night of baseball coverage on ESPN. I mean, I want you to remind the people that you'll be covering a White Sox game that evening.
Absolutely. Hopefully I'll be part of the broadcast. I mean, it just depends on if the crew travels. Last year, I did a bunch of stuff when the Cubs were on Sunday night. So Baseball Tonight, we'll probably do a lot of stuff that night from Guaranteed Rate, and then the game itself, and you just don't know what the broadcast situation is, if A-Rod and those guys are going to travel or not. But anyway, that's for another day. Connor, great initial flight with you on ESPN 1000, at least outside of White Sox Weekly. Welcome aboard. I'll be working with you on the baseball beat a lot, and I'll be listening the next couple hours to you and Brian. Be well.
See you, my friend.
You got it. This is ESPN 1000.